interviewing our own staff, the intention around it was to allow everyone to learn about the people that worked with us. And the other benefit was also for newer practitioners in our industry to hear all the different ways that people ended up working and finding this as a career.
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
And we're back with another episode of the podcast on podcasting. It's friend Adam A. Adams. And as you know, the main goal of this podcast is to support you in growing your podcast, growing your brand, growing your influence, and in turn, increasing the business that you do so that you can make more money. And it all stems from your podcast. We've got Phil Brown on the show today, and he's going to be talking a lot about some unique things that he's been doing. For one, talk about batching, help you to be able to understand how batching can serve you, how it can help you. And just a little bit of background on Phil. You'll notice this here in a moment. He's originally from England. You live in Vermont now?
That's correct, yeah.
All right. So originally from England, and you joined a company called the High Five Team back in May of 2015. So over 6 years ago. And what they do is they support human growth, I think, and it's mainly to do with adventures. Like, it's all education, but it's all through things like, what is it called? The ropes courses, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Awesome.
So yeah. I think we'll get into a little bit of that. And if you want to find Phil's show, it's called Vertical Playpen. And don't even worry. It's already in the show notes. So scroll down a little bit. You can see the link to Vertical Playpen. That's the podcast that he runs through the company that he works with, High Five Team. So I guess you're out of the northeast of the US. And so the first question that I have for you, Phil, is who decided to start a podcast? Was it you? Was it someone else that said, hey, we want to start a podcast, but we don't want to run it? How about you, Phil, and they made you the guinea pig, or how did that happen?
Yeah, I think that for us, we have a retreat each year where all our staff get together and we come up with new ideas. We call it walking on the moon. So really thinking about what can we do that might be different and help grow our business. And for a couple of years, I'd brought up the idea of a podcast, but there wasn't anyone on our staff who were like jumping at it and wanting to do it. And so eventually I just said, you know what, I'm going to do it. I ended up buying a $25 microphone off Amazon. And I was recording. I recorded actually the first, I think, 15 to 20 episodes in my car because that was the best location I could get for sound in our office. So winters in Vermont, sat in my car with guests in the passenger seat. But we wanted just to create a proof of concept. That was at least my goal. We didn't have a huge budget. I work for a not-for-profit. And so sometimes come up with new ideas. You have to do things on a little bit of a shoestring budget. And so I tried it. Let's see if we'll put it out there. We really focus on, as an organization, this idea of connection before content anyway. But how do we really connect with our audience? And so we wanted to connect with the people we work with. Rather than doing a workshop for a day and then waving goodbye to this group and they never see us again, how can they stay in touch? And I had the idea of doing this podcast. It immediately kind of grew. It was one of those things that I think that the community were looking for. I'm very lucky that I am in a very niche field and we're the only podcast that exists in our industry. So that really did help us. And so the community kind of grew around it to the extent now we're coming up on, we're in fact just over 2 years and we're coming up on that 100th episode. That's the golden 100th episode I'm looking for. But we're getting there and it's really been something for me personally has given me great growth. An awareness of what I can contribute to the field. It's got rid of some of my imposter syndrome maybe that I felt over years, like out stuff and let people hear what I'm talking about and people resonating with it. And I've been able to share a lot of good information and also have great interviews with people in our field, which is to the positive of myself and also others. So lots of benefits to the podcast. And it really just came from, I think we should do this.
That's cool. So there was an annual retreat and everybody was brainstorming. This is like the second time you threw out the podcast. Nobody else wanted to do it. So did you say you just volunteered? You're like, fine, I'll do it and I'll go buy a cheap mic and I'll be the host.
Yeah, I was the one really bringing the idea to the table. So it was hard for me to put it out there and not have something involved in it. Like, I know you need to do it.
So, but you've had, which I think, well, I'd have to say, I don't think everyone has imposter syndrome. It's just inevitable. I know I have it. I have it on every episode. Like, I'd never got over it. Like, right now I have imposter syndrome. Right this second I do. And a lot of times when I talk to my clients and I'm supporting them and helping them and pouring into them, like to help grow a podcast or whatever, I still feel that way. And it hasn't left me. I'm curious, what made you get over imposter syndrome enough? Because maybe you're like me, it still happens. But what allowed you to be able to take that step? Because I think a podcaster is listening, or a brand new podcaster, or somebody who is about to start their show, and they're like, when is this going to go away? How do I get over it? So kind of what was your story on imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I think that absolutely I still have it. I don't think it necessarily goes away either. And I also am someone who suffers from anxiety. So having that parallel, that combination doesn't always serve well for you to then press that record button. For me, I had a lot of buying into it because I was trying to have this a part of something else. It wasn't just the Phil Brown show. It was doing this for the organization and knowing the benefit of all that stuff that I do. And through repetition, I've got much, much better at it. And actually, I found that interviewing guests and doing the podcast has only grown me in the role of an educator, and also has grown my confidence in being able to speak towards what I'm talking about. I will say something that's helpful is when your listeners respond back. It gives me such a boost when I get an email from someone, if it's a new adventure facilitator, saying, thank you for this podcast. This has given me the thing I needed. I don't feel as alone anymore. That only helps. And so I highly encourage people to grab a mic and record. One thing, it's, I don't know if you struggle with this, Adam. I know I certainly do. But listening back to myself, that's such a hard thing, to listen to my own voice back. So that's something you get used to as well, having to listen to the back, especially if you edit yourself. And that's something I do as well. So I have to listen to myself a lot.
When you're editing, do you ever cringe?
Oh, a lot. And you know what's funny is you'll start to notice when you edit podcasts, what your guests, what their ticks are, what those things that they do often, but you hear your own too. And that's helpful because you get to work on it. But I would find myself saying like a lot. And when I'm interviewing and someone gives a great piece of feedback, I go, yeah, absolutely. I say that so often. I've got good at cutting that out. So if you don't hear it in the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Exactly.
I want to say it now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it is that I say because I stopped. What it is that I still say because I did stop editing my own podcast, but I had my first podcast was about real estate investing, and my first 300 episodes, I edit. I did all of the post-production. Well, for the most part, like I would have somebody else do it because I was stressed about having to record it, find the guests, and do all of the editing. It was a lot for me. And so I kept giving it off to other people in my team, and they never edited it the way that I would have edited it. And for some reason, I must be having some type of rose pinned to my nose or chip on my shoulder. I was always overcritical of the way that someone else would do it. And it took me years in order to just find my team to start editing it. And that finally happened. And they've edited probably almost 300 now. So I did more than half of them. And I hope that our listener, if they have the budget for it, I know you do a nonprofit and all that. I hope if the listener has a budget in place that they skip editing it themselves, just because I believe that that allows you to stay in your lane a little bit. But if they are going to edit themselves, Phil, what, besides the fact that you said like a lot, and what was the other thing?
Yeah, that's absolutely. Perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you learn, maybe either about yourself or about the editing process, that you could pour into somebody who might be doing that on their own?
Yeah, something that I've started doing more often now when I edit, and it actually solves two purposes. One, it gets rid of me having to hear myself as much. But the other thing is it really highlights the guest who I'm speaking to. And I do a mix between interviews and solo. But if I'm ever doing an interview, I will notice where I'm speaking, and I'm actually quite a lot of what I'm saying, and try to really get that down to the question. What I tend to find in conversation is that I like to, and I think this is where this imposter syndrome also comes into play, is that I'll ask a question and then I'll clarify what I mean by the question to legitimize somewhat the question a little bit. So I'll say, like, tell me about this. And I'm saying this because blah, 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 blah. And then I'll repeat, so tell me about this. And so what I found now is I can cut all of that out and just get to me saying the question and get into the person answering. And that way I get rid of some of me. I highlight the guest a little bit more and it still feels conversational, but I don't have to worry so much about where I'm going to be over talking. And also in the conversation, and I'm a very conversational in my interviews, it does allows me to get out of my head a little bit more and not worry about the script. And I can really focus on the conversation because I can fix some of that in the post. So that tends to work for me.
I definitely saw myself as you were sharing this, which means that our listener, another podcaster, is going to learn from it for sure. When I started my first podcast, I would ask a question, but it probably took me like 3 minutes to ask the question. And it doesn't sound like it's quite taken you that long, which is awesome, but I didn't really notice it while I was in the interviews, but when I was actually editing my own podcast, and I'm like rolling my eyes, when am I going to get to the freaking question here? And it basically came down to almost what you said. You said, I'll ask a question, then I'll clarify what I mean by the question, and then I'll ask a question again. I went so far, Phil, where I would ask the question, I would clarify the question, I would answer the question, answer it, and then I would ask it again, and I would be like, wow, I just totally put words into their mouth. Have you ever done that, or am I the only one?
Yeah, no. In fact, as you were saying it as well, it popped into my head. I think back over the couple of years that I've been doing this and noticing my change. I also used to answer my own question, but I used to answer after they'd answered it. So I would ask the question, clarify the question, ask the question. They would answer it. And then I'd go, wow, that's such a great... Well, I'd probably say, yeah, absolutely. And then I would say, and my point of view is this. And then I would give my diatribe, and it was often very longer than sometimes their question. And so all of that stuff I've kind of reduced in a way and got to a point where, and now I'm getting to the habit of being able to do that in the moment, which does help. I'm not having to do as much cutting, but I've been trying to do my best to highlight when I'm interviewing their answer, less so about my answer and the clarification of my question, which is a struggle.
About your guest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let the guest highlight. And then when the guest is listening to it, now they can feel like they really shined. They're probably more likely to share it as well.
Very much so, because I think that when you give it to them at the end and when they listen to it, if they're hearing 90% of you and 10% of them, they're probably like, why did you put my name at the start of this?
You know? Another thing you mentioned is that you have also anxiety. So like you've got the imposter syndrome, but you also have anxiety. And you mentioned that sometimes that makes you afraid, or did make you afraid to push record.
Mm-hmm.
What about publishing an episode?
Yeah, very much so. I think that when I first started, I did the thing which is often recommended of like batching a bunch of episodes prior to the launch. But I recorded them. I think I probably recorded them in January, February. I didn't get the first episode out until a couple months later. And I think that that came from that hesitancy to push, to be vulnerable in front of essentially my peers. Because it's a niche podcast, I knew that most of the people who would be listening to this are people I have probably interacted with at conferences, when I travel to conferences, and it would be in my network. And so putting yourself out there and saying, you should listen to me, is, it can be a challenge. And so thankfully, I had the support of the people around me saying, this is part of, this is under the umbrella of High Five, this is under the umbrella of an organization that's not you. So that makes me feel more comfortable. I do have deep empathy with those people who have their names on their own podcasts or do it solo, because I think even there, I would maybe have more hesitancy to put my name. But nice that it's funny, it's even in the last couple of months, I've been more comfortable being more clear that I'm the host of this podcast and I'm sharing points of view that are also my own. But it's almost like a bit of a shield when I had the org in front of me.
Another thing that you mentioned that I think is supportive to a brand new podcaster, and I learned it as well, is getting out of your own head as you're creating a podcast. And I'll do something that you are not doing, and I'll talk about myself or a story with a client. She's a doctor, and like somebody that I definitely feel imposter syndrome around, because I didn't get a doctorate in anything. I got an associate's in something and have very much less schooling. But she was saying that she has imposter syndrome. And something that you said was her benefit as well. And I hope that it resonates with the listener. You said one of the ways that you get out of your own head is realizing that it's not really about you. It's about your listener. It's about your company. And that's something that she's starting to learn, is that if she needs to sound smart, if she needs to sound eloquent, if she needs to be the best of the best, if she needs to be perfect, then it's going to hold her back from having a podcast. But she's finding a way to see that it's about her listener and pouring into her listener. And I have the same thing. I'm not the most eloquent person. I didn't get all these high degrees. And the only way that I can keep coming back to the podcast is knowing that it's kind of like for a higher purpose. How do you resonate with that, Phil?
Yeah, I think in a big way. As I mentioned, I go to conferences, I present at conferences to large numbers of people about the work that I do. And in those environments, I even frame to people that I'm going to give you some ideas, but you don't have to take them as a gospel. You don't have to take them as written law that you have to abide by. You can interpret it. You have the license to be able to misinterpret some of what I'm saying if you want, to make it fit whatever need is going to work for you in your environment. And I think that that's the thing. I get nervous about sometimes sharing information and people saying, "Well, Phil told me that, so I must do it that way." And so I've got much better at being able to say, no, I'm putting out ideas, and people then can interpret those ideas and use them in any way. And I've had people respond, and I've been connecting with a community of listeners, people who have said, "You've just given me a great idea. You've given me the license to be able to be a little bit more creative in my thinking." And that was very beneficial to me. That's saying what I'm doing, and this is something I train to, that people become thinking practitioners. And what I mean by a thinking practitioner is they don't do something because Phil told me or because Adam told me, but they understand the why, the rationale, the reasoning behind something. And so then they can make that distinction on what they're going to do based on their own reasoning around it. So they understand the why. And so they're a thinking practitioner. Mm-hmm. And so I've started to get in that mindset when I'm putting words out there. And I've been more comfortable, even in the last few episodes, giving more of my opinion, but just knowing that it's an opinion and people can take that or leave it, but I don't have to be, because I was very conscious. I work in an area that has risk. If I'm teaching a technical skill about climbing in the air, I have to be very, very clear, because there is someone could fall, right? So there's some risk involved. So I was always very cautious about what I was going to say, because I didn't want someone interpreting in a some way, in a certain way, and doing something wrong and then pointing the finger at me. But now I've been much more comfortable saying, no, I'm training people to become thinking practitioners. So they can take my word and they can have conversation with me. And that takes some of the heat off me being, this is what Phil's saying, rather than, here's an idea. Now let's have a conversation, or you can run with it. And hopefully it inspires you in some way.
Yeah. I want to go back to a piece that you mentioned toward the beginning of kind of like your why of creating a podcast. And I know there's like so many different people out there that are starting podcasts, likely not all for the same reason. So something that I think I have quoted for you is like, we wanted to connect with people that we work with. Mm-hmm. Something like that is what you said. And I'm curious what you meant by that. If you could elaborate on who specifically it is that you're trying to connect with? Are you trying to get in front of new people? Is it just the people that are inside your organization, et cetera? Like, who is it that you're really doing this podcast for?
Yeah, our podcast has evolved. And I think that that is something that is worthwhile for people to know as well. However it's going to start doesn't have to be how it ends. So you'll go through an evolution. And for us, it initially started with the idea that we value connection with our clients. So we work with clients on a regular basis. We're a person, human development kind of organization. So we work with a lot of people, and a lot of people come through our door and they would see us for the time they're seeing us. If it was a one day, a multi-day program, they'll see us for that time. But we wanted to be able to, once they left, stay in connection in some way, stay in their brain a little bit. So they didn't forget about us and we didn't forget about them. So we put out the podcast with the intention that everyone who came would have access to this. And we would say, now, if you want to stay in touch, this is a way. Every week we throw out a new episode. So you want to hear more from us and more ideas? This is how. This will grow your experience. But what we found is as the pandemic hit and our in-person work reduced, we went into the digital world, that we realized that actually our message is valuable to others. So recently it's grown a little bit more. We've done more emphasis on work and trying to grow audience. But very much initially, it was about connecting our existing clients.
Well, what were the first few episodes about then?
So if you listen to our first 20, I think it's something like that, they were all introductions to our staff. And that's what also made it very easy. I loosely called them the road to High Five and was interviewing our own staff on how they ended up working at High Five. And the intention around it was to allow everyone to learn about the people that worked with us. So they learn about all of our staff members. And the other benefit was to also for newer practitioners in our industry to hear all the different ways that people ended up working and finding this as a career. So there was a dual purpose to that. But those were the first episodes, all recorded in my car. So I asterisk over that when people listen to the audio quality. But that's what you can get if you do $25 mic in your car. That's the sound you get.
Couple quick questions with the $25 mic in your car. Were these guests with you in the car or were you using internet?
So they were with me and they were in the passenger seat. So awkward experience of an interview, less face-to-face, less, more side of the face to side of the face. There was a lot of like trying to move in your seat so you could sort of look at each other. And I had, so this is a good thing to learn. I bought a condenser microphone instead of dynamic, but it just created so much echo in anywhere I went. And that's why the car ended up in the perfect place. So now I'm with dynamic.
Yeah. Well, for the listener, there's lots of our episodes that talk about the difference between condenser and dynamic, and I do recommend you get a dynamic. Phil, you mentioned that you interviewed people from your team, like your first 20-ish episodes were employees of the company, not for profit. And I was wondering, have you ever interviewed people like who have gone through your course and kind of got their story?
Yeah. So pretty much after I'd run out of all of our staff, because our staff was finite in its number, I had to think of what else we would do. So once people started listening and I realized, okay, there's a good number of people wanting to hear this stuff, I then started reaching out to people in our field who I knew, peers or sometimes competitors or so in our industry, but then also people who had been for our program. So a number of the participants of our program have now also been interviewed for that. And in fact, pretty much a lot of the early ones were all client-based. So we transitioned from staff to clients. And then after I'd interviewed some clients, then I went to other professionals in our industry. And so we're on that trend now of still continuing to interview other professionals. But I have got actually a couple of interviews recorded and batched of some other clients that I'm excited to throw in there. Completely unknown people. And actually, probably one of my most valuable episodes, and maybe this is helpful for people listening, one of my most valuable episodes was with a client who was completely unknown, and it just had a different lens, just a different kind of conversation around the benefits of the industry. So the other people who work in our industry felt the energy of that person. Rather than being a professional who does it for the money, they were doing it for other reasons. So he worked with people who had developmental issues and difficulties. So it was a really very emotionally tied episode. And it took our industry in a different lens. And so that was very cool because someone else got to interpret the language of what we taught with their own lens. And that's different than peer-to-peer interaction. It's different between other people in our professional industry. They were able to take our work and transfer it to their work, which broadened the scope of what we do, which for me was very exciting.
I've got two questions. I heard you say, in the beginning, you had your teammates on your show. You also mentioned that you've done solo episodes. You also mentioned that you had your participants who have come through the program. And the fourth type of episode that you mentioned that you have done is bringing in competitors, experts in the same similar field. If you only could pick just one of those four, and you couldn't do any of the others for eternity, Which one and why?
I think I would go for our clients. And the reason for that is because I have personal connection with them and I've seen them and experienced stuff with them in a different, more intimate way than I had with any of the others. So they mean more to me sometimes. They don't get listened to as much as some of the other ones from a just a listener perspective of what I'm getting from the stats. But for me, they mean more. And I think they also mean a lot to the individual. And they're much more likely to share it because they may have only ever guested on my podcast. Whereas other people in our industry, there's a lot of people who have been on lots of podcasts. So I have to go above and beyond for those people to help them share and spread the word. But those people who I have intimate connections with, they'll bend over backwards because they've already seen the power of what you do because you've worked with them so intensely outside of interviewing them.
I also think if you have your clients on there, people that have gone through, that have hired you or gone through your program or taken your online course, or they're kind of, because of their story, in my opinion, it seems to resonate even better with potential clients. So I liked that you picked that one. So now I'm going to let you pick another one. So team, solo, and competitors. If you could only add one more to just interviewing people that have gone through the program, which of the new three options would you choose?
I would choose solo. And the reason for choosing solo is the ease in terms of scheduling, in terms of recording, in terms of editing. It's harder from the imposter syndrome, harder from the anxiety part that we've referenced before, because it has to be more from you, but you have more control. And trying to schedule around also current work schedules that I have to deal with. And I've also found the editing harder. And I think that, I wonder if this, you resonate maybe with this or did in the past. I always find it hard to cut out stuff that a guest has said because it wasn't stuff that I'd said. And so I always feel a little guilty cutting out some of them. And so it means that some of those episodes end up being longer and the editing process might be longer. On when it's just me talking, I'm incredibly brutal to my own voice. I don't care. I didn't care as much. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to cut that whole section out. It didn't mean anything to me. So I think that just from a process perspective, I think solo is easier.
You brought up a lot of really good points, like you can cut it out easier. It's a little bit easier because you don't have to worry about somebody else's schedule. And then you had pros and cons, but there's one thing that I was wondering if you've ever noticed, because I have. When doing your own solo episode, like, are you ever there thinking to yourself, like, I can procrastinate doing this episode because I could do it anytime. But when I'm interviewing with Phil Brown, we've got a booked schedule. I got to be there. There's no choice. It's going to get done. But when it's with me and my solo, I'm like pretty nervous. Is that just not something you've ever dealt with? Or
you're absolutely right. Even as you're saying, I'm just talking myself out of my decision. No, I shouldn't have picked that one. No, but I think that you're right. I have, you not only put it off because you don't have the, you put off the editing too. It sits recorded for a longer time because you haven't got someone, you know, letting someone down by not having their episode come out earlier. I also find myself, and I wonder if that's true for other people listening to this, it will take you longer because you'll repeat things over and over again. You'll try the intro like 20 times, or you will add a bit and it's like, all right, I have to re-record that because I can. Whereas in a interview, you don't have that luxury as much to be able to like redo stuff as efficiently. So there's lots of procrastination, I agree, with doing stuff alone. I've got good at being able to schedule my time and saying, partly because the podcast for me is now a part of my day-to-day work, my week schedule, but I have other responsibilities. So when I put in the calendar, Phil Brown podcasting time in the calendar, I actually have to use it. So I feel like I'm still held to a schedule. It's just not someone else I'm going to disappoint other than maybe my colleagues when they don't have any new episodes coming.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Phil, I want to get into the batching. Like, I really want you to pour into us on what you've learned over time as far as batching episodes goes. And I'm going to do that, but we are going to take a quick break for our sponsor, and then we'll be right back and we'll talk about batching and everything you've learned. Hey, my friend, as you know, this episode is sponsored by my company, growyourshow.com. We want you to be able to have the best tools at your disposal without costing you a whole arm and a leg. So right now you can get a free list of vetted equipment that, like mics, mixers, webcams, sound treatment, editing software, everything that you need. I created the whole PDF with direct purchase links just to save you time and money to help it be more convenient for you. So this free PDF will help you skip all the guesswork. If it's on there, it's vetted and approved by yours truly. And if it's not on there, it's probably not worth the money. So go ahead and get yours at growyourshow.com/PDF. Let's get back into the show. And we're back with Mr. Phil Brown, the accent that I wish I could copy. All the girls would like me a lot better, that's for sure. And we're talking about batching. Phil's going to share with you a couple of strategies, pros, ways of actually batching, and then one thing that you need to avoid. So take it away, Phil.
Yeah. So a lot of people recommend batch recording episodes. So that means doing a lot of episodes so that you have them ready and available. So you're not stressing as much and you're not doing the week by week recordings and having to keep up with that schedule, because I wouldn't be surprised if some pod fade, that's where you lose that energy for podcasting, disappears because you're constantly trying to keep up with the pace. Every time you've got a new episode out, you have to do a new one. So the way I've batched, I actually use a tool called Trello in order for organizational purposes for me. And then I can see all the episodes that I need to do, and then I can move them over to a line. And I will also block out, if I can have the opportunity to block out a week or a couple of weeks where I just do a bunch of interviews. So I schedule everything through Calendly. That's how I tend to schedule things as well. That allows the calendar to not get too crowded. So those spins have been helpful for me. And that as well, I found that the ability for batching is, that especially if you're doing interviews back to back, that you're getting a real good flow of doing them. If you've got gaps between when you're doing them, you sometimes feel a little rusty. So repetition can be really, really helpful when you're doing that. For me, however, something that I think that is something that happened recently that I think is a good warning against batching, or at least a caveat asterisk when you are batching, is to understand that you can't release all of those episodes all at once. So there's going to have to be a scheduling of release. And some of those people that you're going to record, if you're recording a lot in a couple of weeks, are going to come out a lot later than other people. And so being very, very clear and upfront with your guests about when the episodes are going to release. And that's something I did not do. And so at one point I batched 25 episodes. And so episode 25 of my batching recording came out 7 months later than when I recorded, which is not ideal for a guest to have to wait 7 months for their episode to come out. So what I ended up doing is I changed my release schedule and I moved stuff around, and I was very honest, and I had to then contact every single guest and say, just so you're aware, this is when your episode came out. So if you're going to batch, be very clear and upfront with your guests when they can expect their episodes to come out. Otherwise, you're going to find just getting some people disappointed, which is what happened with me. And I had to have those not fun phone calls.
So were people coming to you first and upset, like, hey, when is my episode coming out? And then you were reactive to, like, oh, I better let everybody else know when these are going to come out? Or was it something else?
Yeah, I had a person who I didn't know. And this is the other part as well. If you don't know someone as well, you have to do some work to really gain some form of connection before you want to spring something on them in a negative way. So yeah, someone reached out and they weren't particularly happy. And I had a good conversation with them and explained the reasoning. For us in my work, I have a very quiet winter and a very busy summer. So that was the intention. I wanted to have stuff ready for the summer, but I wasn't upfront and clear with them that that was going to be the case. And just lack of information, it's natural human nature that you fill it in, that lack of information, with negative information very often. So this person just assumed that I'd listened to the audio and hated it. And so I think there was defensiveness on their end, saying, like, I'm really sorry. Obviously, it was a bad episode. And I was like, no, nothing was bad. It was my lack of clarity to you. And so I think batching is a great idea. Just have that awareness, because I didn't think of that ahead of time. Now it seems so obvious. Of course, they would not have their episode come out later, but I just wasn't very clear.
I guess it's important that we know how many episodes you are publishing per week. Is it one? Is it two or three? Or
At the time, I was doing once every 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
So when you batch record 25 episodes, do the math, that's a year's worth of episodes.
Yeah.
And so I ended up having to go to a weekly release schedule just to keep up. And actually I've found now I've kept it a weekly, for it's been there for nearly a year. And it's actually helped in multiple areas. But yeah, that was just a lesson I learned. So I think that's a lesson I wanted to impart when it came to badging.
So when somebody asks you if they can come on your show, what do you say?
Now, at the time I said, oh, absolutely. And I would always schedule it. Now I'm much clearer about knowing how much I've got still to do, how much is still coming out, and where there are open spaces. I think it's a good lesson for people, especially if they're new. You have this nervousness around, I'm not going to have anyone want to be on my podcast. The reality is I've never asked someone and had anyone say no, partly because a lot of people want to be able to talk about stuff, right? They like to talk and they want to share their information. But now I'm clearer of saying, for now, I'm not scheduling anything until the end of August. And so when I do that, then I'm going to have a set number, and I've got a set number already assigned for myself and the open spots. I've had people reach out and I've told them I would contact them again in August. And so I've got that on my list. And so I've had to slow my pace down with that. And also knowing some other episodes, something might come up in the year and you're like, this has to come out now. So everything does shift. Things in the schedule have sometimes shifted based on stuff that's come out. We had an episode that came out because something changed in our industry, and we had a public service announcement almost to put this out into the world. And so I needed to just bump that. And so that obviously affects everyone else. And whenever you bump it, figure out all the chain that's going to happen to that and be clear and honest with people and reach out. I was always nervous about doing that, but it's super beneficial.
What did you mean earlier by sometimes I block out a week or two? You use Calendly. Mm-hmm. You said sometimes I block out one full week or 2 weeks at a time just for batching recordings. Does that mean it's 8 hours a day, 5 days a week of simply only recording for 2 weeks straight? Or if not, can you kind of share what you're really doing with your batching?
Yeah. So in the days, it's certainly not going to be 8 hours. Although if I can, and I am fortunate in my work in the winter months, I do have open days that I can say, I'm going to just, if I get multiple in this day, I have had one time I've had to do five in a day, too much. So know the limitations on your own abilities as well. And if you're going to do it that route, you can set this in Calendly already to have buffers of 15-minute, 30-minute windows from the next person does an appointment that will block out. I also didn't do that one time. I did 3 interviews back-to-back, no breaks. Sometimes interviews go long. So that was a big mess. But if I do, I will have often days where people can pick times in those days free. And just to keep myself in interview mode, I really like to be in the zone to be able to do it. And I do like to spend amount of time researching people as well. That way I can have those days be set, and I will do it in a week or a 2 week block and really try to maximize that time and be upfront with my other people I work with saying that this is my podcast window and I'm going to try to do this in this time here. Yeah. Don't do too much.
A lot of good stuff, Phil. I appreciate you going through that. Again, for you who's listening and you want to follow Phil, you want to check him out, I am subscribed to the Vertical Playpen myself, and you should too. You can find that just by scrolling down a little bit, and you'll see that in the show notes. I have a few notes that I've taken as you've been going through your story, your experience. One big takeaway for me and anyone who is probably running a business, your annual retreats that your company does is probably just so smart, where you let people brainstorm ideas like this. It reminds me of The One Thing by Gary Keller, where he and his team came together and they were like, what's the one thing that's going to move our business forward? And that's pretty much what you did with starting your podcast as well. And that came up because of this retreat where people weren't focused on the work. So I thought that was really interesting. Couple other things. You mentioned that you have anxiety about different things. You felt imposter syndrome. You might even still feel it at times. And you were able to get over it in part because you knew that it wasn't all about you. It's like about your listener, what you're trying to achieve. And I think that that's just something that any podcaster needs to hear, is like, they're not alone. It's not just them who feels those things. Like, I certainly have as well. You also mentioned that you got rid of some filler words by editing your own podcast. And you talked a little bit about the difference between interviewing for example, your teammate, interviewing parts of your team, interviewing past clients, or interviewing industry experts also in your field, versus having your own podcast, and which of the four you would do first and foremost if you could only pick one, and which one you would pick if you could pick one more. Let's see, what else did I get? I like that part where you said, as you were talking about the reason, your why behind having the podcast was mainly so that you could connect with your already clients. A note that I put on there with lots of asterisks was the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And what I mean by that is, as you stay in front of your client, a past client, they're your biggest fans. Your past client is the person who loves and respects what you do, who you are, more than anyone else in the world. And as you can stay in front of them, you can ensure that they continue to do business with you and that they refer others to you. So I thought that that was brilliant, and I put lots of stars. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. A few other notes that I got from you is Podfade comes a lot for a lot of people, mainly because you're stressed because you didn't batch. And so here you are like, hell, I don't even want to do this podcast anymore because I got to rip my hair out. And I wrote down another note, like Podfade, because you're constantly behind the eight ball and stressed, you're going to Podfade. But if you do what Phil Brown said, and that is to batch episodes the way that he talked about for like a week or two. And in one time he was able to get like 25 podcasts ahead. Then you don't have to worry about all that stuff. You don't have to find more guests. You don't have to create more content. You don't have to outline more content because you found a way to get 3 months, 6 months, or even 12 months of content ready to go on the side. So you don't have to do that anymore. It was also really smart the way that you mentioned that sometimes, like your PSA, sometimes you might have to change the order. You might have to add an episode or move some episodes back so that you can put something that is critical today. And another thing that you learned is your limits per day. You said 5 is just too many. 5 is too much. I can't do more than that. I can't pass that. And so any of us who are launching a podcast, starting a podcast, I know a few people that easily record 8 to 12 in one day. I get burnt out right at the same number as you. If I pass 5, I'm like exhausted. And the listener, as you start your own podcast, you've got to figure out, where is your limit? Where is that threshold? Where do you want to be? Phil also talked about enjoying doing the back-to-back episodes because he stays in the flow. He stays in the zone. He's able to basically put on the horse blinders and not focus on so many other things. So Phil, thank you for bringing up so many different tangible points that we can do to be better podcasters. And I cannot wait to listen to more of your episodes at Vertical Playpen. I will let you go. How about this? What's your last parting advice before we hang up?
Yeah, so maybe this is a big one, but I have a niche podcast. And so when we talk about sponsorship, we talk about monetization, we talk about those things, people get nervous because they haven't got a great audience. I can tell you that I have a pretty niche and small podcast, but I have some sponsors. And so it came from just asking. I mentioned that with like the interview ping, just asking people. I've done the same with this. I focused on areas that are niche to me, industry members that are niche in our field that have no relevance outside of that field, and reached out and asked if they would support. And I just have a different mindset around it now. I don't have the like sponsorship. It's more partnership based, but as a niche podcast, it's worked out well for me. And so it's grown, and now I have equipment around me that is better than I had with the $25 in the car. So I made it an actual thing.
I really appreciate you sharing that, because I do know a lot of people who, like in Clubhouse and other forums, Facebook, different groups, where they are so sure that you cannot monetize unless you have, pick your number, 30,000 downloads per episode, whatever it is that they think, and you found a way to do it without that. So I think that was a really good thing to end a podcast with. Phil Brown, I will have your website in the show notes, your podcast in the show notes. So I really, really appreciate you coming on, and I hope that the listener reaches out to you.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Adam.
Bye for now. By the way, one way to ensure that you don't miss out on great content that we're producing on a regular basis is to make sure you're subscribed to the show. You need to be subscribed or following the Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to it in order not to miss all of that. And before I let you go, I need to mention, because a lot of people are asking, do you help? Can you help me with this? And the answer is yes. My company actually does it. It's called Grow Your Show. And you can find that at growyourshow.com. Our clients, they call us the easy button for podcaster because they simply have to record their episode. And they know that every single thing else is done for them. We sweat the hard stuff so you can be the star of your show. And if you would like help to make sure that we're editing and publishing and promoting and doing your social media, it's all in one place. And I think it's pretty affordable. You'll have to take a look for yourself. Just go to growyourshow.com and check us out. And by the way, I'll see you on the next episode.